Okay, I realize I changed slightly the title of a talk. It's not, well, usually when I start to talk on brain cosmology, I have to explain why we're studying brains and why we're interested in the cosmology of brains. Probably I don't have to convince you of this here. Maybe I have to convince some of you that one way of studying brain cosmology is to start with rather simple setups and then to try to understand what is necessary in order to have a complete theory, and then to look into a fundamental theory, namely strings, in order to see exactly to search for what is needed and also to find in the theory the consistency, the complete consistency. And so most of what I'll be saying will be discussing toy models where one tries to understand exactly what is needed in order to have a realistic cosmology and in order to try to solve some of the problems. As you know, usually two situations are considered. The case of two brains in compact manifold. I just drew here the case of a single extra dimension. These brains could be sitting at orbital points and could be sitting at the end of space in these extra dimensions. So that's, for example, the Ojava-Witten setup. The other possibility is to have one or several brains on which gravity is localized, in which case you don't really have to, you don't really need a compact dimension. Of course, the brain idea has been proposed in order to try to solve some of the problems. I'll come back to that later. We have old problems, and this type of setup might provide a new way of looking at old problems, and I'll be discussing some of them in what follows. So let us start with, I guess, the simplest model, model with codimension 1, so one extra dimension. I'll be discussing models with codimension greater than 1 later, but let's just start with the simplest case. So matter is in the form of perfect fluid with pressure P and density rho. It's localized on the brain with tension sigma, and the bulk is empty except for some vacuum energy lambda B, positive or negative. Now, if one works out the five-dimensional Einstein equations plus the junction conditions, which have to do with the fact that I'm considering an infinitely thin brain, then one ends up with one equation which generalizes Friedmann equation. So here is the standard Friedmann equation with cosmological constant lambda, energy density rho, and the standard term for spatial curvature. And here is what one gets in this simple toy model. One gets a constant piece, which will be interpreted as the cosmological constant, which receives two contributions, one from the bulk vacuum energy, and the other one from the string tension, quadratic in the string tension. There's a term which is linear in the energy density, which can be compared to this one, and which gives a relation between the Planck scale, fundamental five-dimensional Planck scale, and the string tension. There's your new rho squared term, which might be important when one gets back to earlier times, where rho is larger. One recovers on the brain the same spatial curvature term, and there's this famous term here, which has got to do with the fact that with the gas of graviton that is hitting the brain, and that can be expressed, it's sometimes called the Weyl fluid, because that can be expressed as, that's a radiation term that can be expressed in terms of the Weyl tensor. So in here it's really summarized the cosmological evolution of this very simple setup. And so that means that at late times one could recover approximately this standard Friedmann equations under the condition that one is really canceling the vacuum energy in the bulk against the string tension term. In this case, of course, one needs anti de Sitter space in such a way that lambda b is negative is minus sigma squared up to scale m5. So this is really the, if you want, the simplest case that can be discussed. When I was adopting in what I've shown you some coordinates where the brain is fixed, one can go to generalize the Birkhoff's theorem, which is valid for this setup, when it doesn't have scalar fields in the bulk. So Birkhoff's theorem is valid in this setup, and show that the most general solution is just static. And the metric is given by the ADH Schwarzschild solution. And so if one adopts the static coordinate, bulk static coordinates, then the brain is moving in the bulk. And so in this setup, the time dependence, the cosmological evolution on the brain, is just given by the motion of the brain in the bulk. And so one gets just by so changing coordinates and using the static bulk coordinates, then one gets, one easily shows that the cosmological scale factor is just given by the position of the brain in the bulk. And so that means that the evolution, in a general case, the evolution on the brain can come both from the motion of the brain in the bulk, and of course from sources on the brain, and one has called mirage cosmology, the study of brain cosmology in the context where the cosmological evolution is mostly driven by the motion of the brain in the bulk. Now, of course, nothing tells us that we should recover a four-dimensional picture. And so there are some specific examples when one should recover the four-dimensional picture. And the two main examples are the case where the extra dimension is compact. In this case, one certainly expects to recover the four-dimensional picture. For example, in the case of the Ojala-Witten theory, where you have the two brains at the on both ends of the bulk. Or if the extra dimension is non-compact, but the four-dimensional graviton is localized. And for example, if one looks at the Randall syndrome solution, where one assumes the Randall syndrome condition that cancels precisely lambda b against the sigma squared term, one recovers exactly the same properties as before. And for example, the Planck scale can be obtained from using the metric ansatz, which is here. The Planck scale can be obtained from the fundamental scale M5, and the relation between the Planck scale and fundamental M5 is exactly the same one that one was getting from just from cosmology, from comparing the effective Friedmann equation with the complete Friedmann equation. So the picture is completely consistent, and it is consistent just because the four-dimensional gravity is localized on the brain. Now, models with codimension larger than one have not received the same attention. They have been studied recently by quite a few authors, and the situation is very different. The situation is very different, first, because the ultraviolet behavior is much different from the case of one codimension or more than one codimension. I'll come back to this point later. And also, there is more interdependence between the brain and the bulk. It's exactly like the difference between if you have electric field between two plates, and if you have, for example, the electric field which comes from just a line of current. If you have electric field between two plates, the position of the plates is not so important. So you know, wherever you are, the field is has the same value. If you have the electric field coming from a line of current, then of course you will be able to know whether you are close to a current or further apart, just because you know the R squared term, the R squared dependence. Well, it's exactly the same thing here. Let me just give one example, which is two extra dimensions, codimension two. which instead of having just a coordinate y, I've got two coordinates, which are the coordinates rho, and which, if you want, is the distance in the extra dimension to the brain, and the angle theta. Now, in the general case, as rho goes to zero, as you get close to the brain, then gamma will have this dependence, 1 minus lambda over 2 over 2 pi squared times rho squared, where lambda is the deficit angle. And so if you want, contrary to the previous case of codimension 1, this means that a bulk particle is will be able to identify the singularity, which is the brain, just by circling around it. And the idea is that if you circle around it, then at radius rho, then you'll find that the circumference is 2 pi minus lambda times rho, just because of the deficit angle. And so there is that means that the bulk particles know about the brain when codimension is larger than 1, which was not the case when codimension was equal to 1. And so that means that there is much more dependence between the brain and the bulk. And for example, Jim Klein and collaborators have shown that you have solutions where the cosmological constant on the brain is completely given by the bulk quantities and is not depending on brain tension. So there are all new setups with really different properties when codimension is larger than 1. Now, most of the configurations that one can think of, the simple configurations that one can think of, are unstable. And well, in one way, unstable configurations are good for cosmological scenarios. After all, if we're searching for inflation, we are looking for an unstable configuration. One example, for example, is brain inflation. In the case of brain inflation, you have two brains which are getting close to one another. And so this is obviously an unstable configuration if you want to get some inflation and to end inflation. So it has got some good points. Of course, we want at the end to identify the stable configuration, so to see what is the final state that you and the unstable configuration is leading to. And some effort has been made to try to understand what are the instabilities in the simple models that we are considering. Let me give one example that we've been working out recently. Let me take the so-called Randall-Sodrum 1 setup, which is just two brains, which has been advocated for understanding the arc of scales between the Planck scale and the weak scale. So there's one brain with positive tension, one brain with negative tension. And well, what we have added is a Gauss-Bonnet term, which you so that means a term quadratic in the curvature. And so you start with the Randall-Sodrum 1 setup, which I just described, and then you add a Gauss-Bonnet term, and possibly a small Gauss-Bonnet term if you want. So that means that in the previous setup with two brains at y equals 0 and y equal yc with tensions sigma 1 and sigma 2, I add in ADS 5 with cosmological constant lambda b, I add the Gauss-Bonnet term. Now, well, things basically get through, so that means the background solution is very similar. You can get a solution similar to the Randall and Sundrum, where k is a slightly different value. It's now depending, of course, on alpha. But in the limit alpha goes to zero, you just recover the standard Randall-Sodrum condition. And there is, again, the condition that one of the brains has to be negative tension. Now, the point is that in this setup, you find that there's a graviton tachyonic mode. And so there is one solution which has got negative mass square. And so that means that this setup, as soon as you include a small Gauss-Bonnet term, this setup is unstable. And of course, the instability, I just took this simple setup. Of course, the instability is related to the presence of a negative tension brain. Now, and you can prove that you have the same kind of instability if you have a single negative tension brain. Of course, everybody argues that a negative tension brain is an unstable object. Usually people say, okay, if you put this, this negative tension brain at orbital fixed point, then you're safe with instabilities. This seems to prove that actually you're not safe, because you know, these two brains were put at, we use a Z2 orbifold, and these two brains were put at orbifold fixed point. Still, you get this type of instability. So that's an example of a simple setup which seems to have an instability. Another one, and probably an unwanted instability. Another one will be discussed by Lev Kaufman tomorrow. It has got to do with radial instability with Desiter brains. You have a setup with two Desiter brains, and you stabilize the radial field, so you stabilize the distance between the two brains. Lev Kaufman and the collaborators have shown that actually there is also in this case an instability which is actually in the radial mode. The previous case was in the graviton mode, the previous instability I described. And this instability here appears in the radial mode, and it has to do with the fact that the radial mass acquires, when you have DS4 brains, acquires one term which is negative, which is minus 4h squared, where h is the Hubble constant on the brains. And so what does that mean? That just means that you know, this configuration is going to fall into a different configuration, probably with h with almost flat brains, with where h is small enough so that, well, the terms I disregarded here are the important ones. And so that shows again that if you look specifically at modes with m squared negative, then you might at the end of the day find out that lots of configurations are actually unstable. Well, I think it just means that well, it could be either this or just that you know, the brain flattens, the two brains flatten out, and so that you know, h becomes small on the two brains. Well, I'm sure that Lev will talk about that tomorrow. Now, what about, well, there are some perturbations that we would like to turn into predictions. Those are, this, you know, trying to compute the CMB spectrum. And as far as I know, to this day, there hasn't been a complete a prediction for a general, there has been some specific predictions, but not a complete analysis of the general prediction of brain models in the context of the, you know, for the CMB. And one of the reasons is the fact that the brain is not a closed system, and so you cannot adopt a four-dimensional picture in order to make predictions. And that has to do with the vibe. If you remember in the expression for the Freeman equations, there was one term which has to do with the vital fluid, and which precisely is the term that shows that there is no, I mean, the evolution of the brain depends on things, graviton particles which are outside the brain. And so the brain is not a closed system. And so, for example, that shows up in the computation of the perturbation for the cosmological microwave background. That shows up in the fact that the Kaluza-Klein modes do not decouple, even to linear order. Moreover, so that means that you have to fix not only initial conditions on the brain, but also initial condition in the bulk, and the physical nature of boundary condition in the bulk is somewhat difficult to understand. Moreover, you might just, if you don't do things carefully, you might just over-constrain your system, because whereas there is some sort of, if you're not careful, the initial condition that you put on the brain might not be consistent with what you're choosing in the bulk. And so that makes it a difficult, not only a technically difficult system, but also somewhat difficult to really make sure that one is doing the right, following the right physical recipe. Moreover, in the two-brain system, one also needs to define precisely which brain fluctuations modes are allowed. And for example, you know, the type of instability that I just described might get into the way also, in this case, if you're not careful. So that's the general analysis is quite difficult, and so far nobody has succeeded in presenting a completely general analysis of this type of perturbations in the CMB. Now, let me turn to a different subject, which is, does the brain picture help us to understand some of the old problems? I'll just take the cosmology of concept problem. In principle, it should, the brain setup is putting in it in a somewhat different light. And as I was saying before, the cosmological constant measured on the brain by the cosmological evolution of the brain receives two contributions, vacuum energy in the bulk and brain tension. And the bad thing is that this requires fine-tuning between the two in order to get an almost complete cancellation. So that's a bad point. The good point is that since you have two sources, you might try to have some sort of adjustment mechanism between the two. And of course, as soon as you talk about an adjustment mechanism, you have to evade Weinberg's no-go theorem. And for a while, people thought that the brain setup allowed to evade the Weinberg's theorem, just because you have an infinite number of fields, and also because you just have five-dimensional Lorentz invariants to start with. So this was, let me remind you of the self-tuning idea, which was not a solution, but had the flavor of being a solution, which was just coupling a scalar field in the bulk conformally with matter on the brain. So if I forget about matter, that means I just get this conformal coupling to the brain tension. Now the problem, the nice feature was that whatever the brain tension is, when was finding a solution which was flat on the brain, with induced metric on the brain which was flat metric, the problem was the presence of a naked singularity at some value outside the bulk, outside in the bulk. And the problem was to try to get away with this singularity. One way to get away was with the singularity was to put a second brain, but of course, as you know, discussed by several people, if you put a second brain, then you get back the fine-tuning on the brain. You could also try to include one-loop corrections to gravity, so the Gauss-Bonnet, again, putting an extra term, which would be the Gauss-Bonnet, high-dimensional term, high-derivative term. In this case, you find out that you have a solution with no naked singularity. The only difference with the previous solution is that you get a plus sign instead of minus sign. So you get a nice solution where you have no longer have a naked singularity. The Planck mass is finite, which means that you're still localizing four-dimensional gravity on the brain. But then fine-tuning reappears. And so you see that whenever you find a way of getting rid of the singularity, then the fine-tuning reappears and vice versa. So most probably, in the context of self-tuning, the fine-tuning was just hidden into the naked singularity. Along the same ideas, there was the proposal that you replace the bulk scale is filled by some black hole configuration in the bulk. And so that was proposed by Xaki, Ehrlich, and Grosjean. And the idea is to put in the bulk Reissner knots from black hole, which has got mass, a charged black hole. And of course, in this case, you're protected from a singularity by horizons. And the idea is that you have enough parameters with charged black holes in such a way that you no longer have fine tunings. But of course, that means that if a brain tension is changing because you have some phase transition or whatever, that means that the black hole has to change its mass and its charge. So of course, that's somewhat a complicated way of, I mean, you have to understand why the black hole would ever change its mass and charge because you have undergone a phase transition in the bulk. But that's at least, there is technically no fine tuning in these solutions. So even if you do not solve the cosmological constant problem, you might try to understand this in this context, dark energy, or at least the reacceleration of the universe. And again, the bulk, the brain setup is providing you with some solutions. Gyat Valid mentioned them a little yesterday, and let me come back to this. Well, the idea is that I told you that you get in the brain setup, you get you get terms which in the Friedmann equation which are quadratic in the energy density on the bulk. You get other terms, which you get one term which is quadratic. Now that has to be compared with a standard Friedmann equation where h squared is linear in rho. So you might think that if you combine the two scenarios, and for example, if you have at the same time higher dimensional gravity plus four-dimensional induced gravity, and that's I'll come back to this model in a second, then you'll end up with an equation which is goes like h squared plus another coefficient times h is of the order of rho. And so if you solve for h, you might get a constant, it's just a second order equation, and so you might get a constant piece which would be the measure of the acceleration at late times. And that's exactly what happens in the induced gravity model, where you have the solution of this type of equation, second order equation, gives you an h squared which has some constant terms into it. And so that means when you get to, okay, this special curvature term is negligible. When you get to late times where rho is sufficiently small, then you get that h squared tends to a constant. And so that's a very nice, that's at least an alternative to the dark energy idea, which is that it's just a modification of the evolution that leads to this late acceleration. Now, as you know, and as Gia discussed, this leads to modification of gravity, that amounts to modification of gravity at a large distance. And there have been several models. Precursor model was the GRS model, Grigory Rubakov-Sibiryakov, which had an instability built in because of the negative bind tension. Multi-gravity models and induced gravity models, which have exactly what I was just describing. They have five-dimensional gravity and an induced four-dimensional gravity term on the brain. Einstein-Hilbert term on the brain. Now, in this case, in this case here, the critical distance is given, of course, in terms of M prime and M5, and it's just critical distance is M Planck squared over 2 M cubed, where M cubed is the fundamental Planck scale. Now, as Gia mentioned, all known models either have ghosts, that's for example the GRS model, or become strong at distances of a few kilometers. And that has been discussed recently by Rubakov, Lüthi, Poatti, and Hartadzi. And the idea is that, for example, as discussed by Valery Rubakov, is that there are scalar and vector modes with dimension 5 interaction terms that scale like M Planck to the squared. And so that means that you've got some interactions that become strong at an energy scale, which in this case is m9 over m Planck to the 4 to the power 1.5. And so which amounts to something like a few kilometers. And so certainly these models have problems. Now, since this is a very nice idea and an alternative to another nice idea, which would be dark energy or quintessence, it might be worth pursuing it a little more. Let me just stress that string models with codimension larger than 1 have properties which are somewhat different, and so that might be a direction to to study further these models. Now, string models with codimension larger than 1 are different because of the different ultraviolet properties. And if you look at the propagator of theory with induced gravity, then you'll find out that Newton's law is always four-dimensional on the brain, if the brain is infinitely thin. And the idea goes as follows. If you look at the propagator, five-dimensional propagator on the brain, so at y equals 0, y is now a vector with two components, then it has got the standard form which with two pieces, just as in the case of codimension 1. But now the difference is that dnp is something which is divergent, just because n is larger or equal to 2. So this is an integral, a divergent integral. And so when you take the limit of a divergent integral, you recover 1 over m to n plus 2 rc to the n p squared. And so you just recover the standard four-dimensional Newton's law. Now, this is so because I took an infinitely thin brain. This is not the case where you take a brain of width w, in which case there is a critical scale that has been discussed by Kiritsis and collaborators. There is a critical scale above which gravity screens, and this critical scale is just given by this, where rc is just this standard radius as defined here in this n plus four dimensional theory. And so that means that in this case, there is above the scale RC, gravity screen, and you no longer get Newton's four-dimensional Newton's law. Now, there are explicit examples of such models coming from strings. And one has been recently discussed, well, not so recently, some time ago discussed by Antoni Adismianassian and Van Hove. And the idea is to take type 2 superstring on M4 Minkowski space times non-compact Calabi-Yau manifold. In this case, okay, so you get...
Can we rule out?
Oh, okay. So in this case, you get your 10-dimensional gravity action. And the other term, which is r to the 4 wedge e squared, yields a term like this, which is precisely an induced gravity term. And so you see that if you consider type 2 string, type 2 or type 2b, depending on the sign here, if you consider type 2 strings on M4 times a non-compact Ricci flat six-dimensional manifold, with Euler characteristic, not vanishing Euler characteristic, the Euler characteristic is here, and of course plays an important role, then precisely you'll get model of brain-induced type model, gravity-induced type model with codimension 6. And so in this case, it's not clear at least what is going on, just because as I was just describing, in the case of codimension larger than 1, you have to be careful because there is some sort of interplay between ultraviolet and infrared behavior. And so I think one still has to study this carefully and also to study extra terms, where it's plus dots here, that might change the behavior of the simplest model with codimension 1. In a way, string theory might be wiser than we are. So to conclude, the brain world setup is certainly not unique. There are two ways to get rid of some of the possible setups. One is to look for instabilities, and there are many, so hopefully one can get rid of most of the setups by just by looking at perturbing around the background when it's considering. Of course, string theory is really the one that will, at the end of the day, give the number of possibilities and will provide the consistency of the full model. But in most cases, these models would be much more complicated than the one I've been studying here. Most brain worlds backgrounds do not lead to satisfactory late-time cosmology, because most of them involve branch decay fields and have problems with all sorts of problems, especially with equivalence principle. If one finds a satisfactory brain world background, then one still has to compute perturbations, and that's a difficult task because the brain is not a closed system, so one has to really address the question of initial conditions both in the bulk and on the brain and in a consistent way. Brain world cosmology may lead to unexpected effects. I think at this time the most striking effect would be a late acceleration. And the brain world idea has given a new set to discuss old problems, but has not yet provided any striking new solutions. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
I'd just like to make a comment about the self-tuning models, because even though you pointed out some of the problems, I think you were still too generous toward them. For instance, as you showed with me and Grosjean, even if you accept the presence of the singularity, we found that there are equally well solutions where the singularity is moving toward the brain, which are not static, and that would be a big crunch solution, or where it's moving away and that's a big bang solution. So the fine tuning has been shifted to the initial conditions. Why are you in the static solution? Mm-hmm. Furthermore, in the model of Shockey, Ehrlich, and Grosjean that you mentioned, they have the sickness that on one of the brains you need to have a source which violates the energy condition that makes, so rho is less than, P is less than minus rho, mm-hmm. This one.
Yeah, I should have stressed that. Yeah.
Yes, and with Firizawi, we showed that even if you add stuff to the bulk, you find that you have to have something in the bulk which is violating this energy condition to get those mm-hmm. solutions. So it really looks like the self-tuning ideas are a bit sick. That's just my comment.
Yeah, I thought I'd said enough to kill it, but
you mentioned important qualitative differences between codimension one and higher. Gravity also, of course, changes greatly between two dimensions and higher. So, is there an important change as you go past codimension two as well? Are there
you mean between two and the rest?
Yeah.
No, I think that the main difference would be between one and larger than one. Between two and I don't see any major differences.
Are there any more questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker.
Just a quick comment, the sort of in response to Steve. The KKALT models, although they're formally codimension six, because it's D3 brains in six dimensions, because the geometry kind of factorizes into 5 plus 5, mm-hmm. They're pretty similar to codimension one. And okay. Nobody's ever really systematically worked out, how did the correspondence? It's not exactly probably like anything that's been done directly in five dimensions, but it might be an interesting thing to try to do. It's pretty mm-hmm. hard technically, mm-hmm. but there might be something like the five-dimensional story there.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again. I love a break.